What's up? This is Movies On Up. Part elastic, part invisible, part fire, part stone. I am the fire and stone of that equation, joined by my elastically invisible co-host, Mike Mann.
It's everything I've ever wanted to be.
You just gotta take what's left.
That's fine.
We are Movies On Up. This is this week's news episode. The tagline for this week, part elastic, part invisible, part fire, part stone. If you know that is from the failed Roger Corman 1994 Fantastic Four, email us, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, Twitter @moviesonup. We got some box office and some news.
Some interesting stuff this week.
Yeah. I've been tired. I kind of wanted to cancel this week, but a couple weeks ago we had an episode where we had nothing to talk about. This week we have quite a bit to talk about, so... And talk a few news headlines, one trailer, get some real talk in there. But we're going to kick it off with some box office. Ooh, what a fun week in the box office this week.
Who would have thought? Oh, well, man. I may have slightly predicted this last week, I think, if you go back. I really think I might have predicted it.
Yeah, Mission Impossible Rogue Nation in its second weekend came in at $28.5 million. That's the leader. Which is kind of a big deal. Not that a Tom Cruise movie held strong and took number one.
For 2 weeks.
But the fact that there was a $130, $140 million budgeted movie opening against it.
Yeah.
Fantastic Four only opened to $25.7 million.
Which is god-awful.
I bought into the hype. I thought that maybe it would overcome all this negative hype. I thought that... It was just suits and people that whose opinions I don't trust on comic book movies saying that this was going to be bad. Oh, man.
Well, those people don't trust are right.
The reviews came out, and this was a very, very weird week for me. We'll get back to Fantastic Four, but I generally don't sway my opinion on a movie about reviews.
See, I normally don't either, but this is the one that kind of really did sway me, because usually, you know, somebody's like, oh, you know, this is a 5 out of 10, and you're like, all right, opinion can put you at a 5, but when you see people throwing out, like, 2s, 3s, you know it's pretty bad.
But here's where my thing is I generally don't let it bother me, but the reviews for this were so bad.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And anytime I look for a new job, I read reviews from former employees. And, like, everybody's going to complain about their job. The only time I take it into consideration is if I'm seeing the same complaint over and over. And that's what the reviews were on this. Every review said the same thing. That it seemed the first two acts were fine, and then the third act, it just falls apart. And it's just a terrible, terrible movie. So, I mean, it wasn't just like, oh, I didn't like Kate Mara's wig. Everything was consistent, and everybody seemed to hate it for the same reasons. And it just failed miserably. Fox is about to lose $60 million on it. But I want to get the rest of the top five before we talk more about that.
We trash Fantastic Four for a fantastic 40 minutes or something.
Because The Gift opened at number 3 at $11.9 million. That's a movie I said it just seemed like a throwaway thriller. Much like I don't let reviews dictate my opinion.
I've heard great
things.
But this
movie has been reviewed fantastically.
Yeah.
It's supposedly really, really good. So it's awkward how that works. That the Fantastic Four trailers, I thought maybe I'd be getting a decent movie. And The Gift trailers just seemed like, it's whatever. Throwaway. But apparently it's really, really good. And I like Edgerton. I like Bateman. So I trust that. So I went from, oh, it's a throwaway thriller, to I want to see that. And a big thing about it opening at $11.9 million, $5 million budget.
Already doubling.
Yeah. So, I mean, and it's got good word of mouth. Like, it should do pretty well the next couple of weeks. In fourth place, Vacation at $8.9 million in just its second week. That's going to go on vacation pretty soon to the
probably
cheap theaters.
Week.
And Ant-Man still at number 5 with $7.9. Back to Fantastic Four, though. I mean, it was a disaster.
Oh, yeah.
Because even the people involved in it, like Josh Trank put out a tweet, I believe it was Thursday night, the director of the movie put out a bitter tweet saying that a year ago he had an idea for this movie that would have got great reviews, but now you have this. And
that's tough.
I don't think... you know, I think there were people that were skeptical. I think myself and a lot of my comic book friends thought maybe that it's just the hate. But then the reviews started coming in, and we all kind of got the same thing.
Yeah, like, at that initially, when we watched that other trailer, you know, a couple weeks ago, I was like, I guess this looks a little bit better than I expected. And then I was like, I don't know if this is enough to you know, really kind of sway me to really want to see it. But, like, I'd be interested. And then once I saw enough reviews saying, this is garbage, you know, I was like, ugh, well, I don't know if I want to spend my weekend doing that.
Yeah, it makes no sense. But the thing is... one of the film blogs put up a nice little, I think it was Comic Book Film or something. Sorry, not to plug the site, but somebody put up a, hey, here's all the stuff from the trailer that's not even in the movie.
That's what I heard too.
There are over 12 shots in the trailer, in a 2-minute trailer, that aren't in the movie.
How do you, like, where do you put that stuff? Like, where does that...
So, I mean, and the rumor is that Josh Trank had an idea, and that the studio wanted the third act changed, and apparently the reshoots are very obvious because it's a mess. It doesn't fit with the rest. Kate Mara's wig is all over the place.
Kate Mara's wig.
But I think another curious question is this it for Josh Trank?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because he's not really churning out any hits.
Well, because this, you know, he essentially... his name's still attached to it, but he distanced himself from it. It's his second movie. Chronicle was a modest hit with a small budget. This showed that he can't be trusted. He was hired for a Star Wars spinoff, but due to how the production was going on this, was fired.
Yeah.
So,
whether he had an idea or not, that idea didn't work at all somehow.
And
whether
I don't,
it was from the studio or what.
And I see people saying, like, oh, you had too much studio interference. A lot of directors have made watchable movies
with a lot of studio interference.
So he's not blame-free. Opening this week, I'm very excited for one of these movies, and younger me would have been way more excited for the other. The one I'm very excited for, Straight Outta Compton. If you haven't listened to our regular Movies on Up episode this week, Ryan and I discuss our favorite movies starring rappers. A lot of fun. I honestly can't wait for this movie. I think it's a cool story.
Yeah, I mean...
it looks fantastic.
It's obviously a little bit before my age range, but it's still something that, like, I obviously didn't get to live through that kind of whole movement. So to be able to see a movie with, you know, the accurate representations and their side of thing, I think is great.
Yeah.
Despite Eazy-E, obviously.
The other one is The Man from U.N.C.L.E. I love Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and Snatch.
Yeah.
I love those Guy Ritchie movies.
Me too.
I love them so much. And then, you know, I haven't loved a Guy Ritchie movie in a long time. Like, I've enjoyed a couple.
Really? What about...
Smokin' Aces, or not Smokin' Aces, Rockin' Rolla was okay. Revolver was okay. The Sherlock Holmes, they're watchable. They're entertaining. See,
that's where we differ, because I really like those Sherlock Holmes movies.
See, I think they're watchable. I think they're entertaining, but they're not something I love.
I have this weird thing for Jude Law, though, where I really like Jude Law movies, so yeah. I don't know if that really sways me.
But, I don't know. Something about this. It's an old show from the 60s that I don't even think people from the 60s care about. I don't think you could have two leads in a movie that I'm less interested in than Armie Hammer and Henry Cavill.
Yeah, they're not like the top-notch.
I don't like
notch.
Either one of them. So I really have no... It's opening in about 1,000 more theaters than Straight Outta Compton.
Which is kind of a bummer, I think.
Instead of over-under, who makes more?
I'm going to be honest and say, even with the theaters, probably Straight Outta Compton.
I'm going with the same thing. I think Straight Outta Compton... I think they'll both be close.
It's going to be close, but I think Straight Outta Compton, if I had to choose one.
Because I think Straight Outta Compton will overperform what's expected, and U.N.C.L.E. will kind of underperform. Speaking of underperforming, they're no Hasselhoff. Zac Efron joins The Rock in the Baywatch big screen movie. This movie's gone through a few directors. The most current one is Seth Gordon of Horrible Bosses, Horrible Bosses 2. I don't know. I didn't care for the show. I didn't, because it was just a dumb show. I don't think we need a big screen adaptation of it.
No, please, no. But I have no interest in this at all.
You know what? You put The Rock and Efron on screen together.
Ugh, make me want to throw up.
I don't know that you could put them in any project that I wouldn't be interested in.
I'd rather see like a Scorpion King remake.
See, I love The Rock. I think he's a fan. I think he's one of the best, like, most charismatic movie stars right now. And I really like Efron. I've been touting Efron for a while, thinking he's going to make that turn from that. People assume he's this teeny bopper thing, but he was really good in Neighbors. He's got, just next year alone, he's got like three other comedies coming out.
I want Zac Efron to do like some sort of crazy, like, action movie where he doesn't like have any kind of comedy or anything.
I'm kind of glad he avoided that, really, because he's the kind that you could easily look at. Werewolf, Shark Boy, Taylor Lautner.
Oh yeah,
riding off of what's it called, Teen Wolf, whatever that's called.
Yeah, Twilight. Hold on, let me correct myself.
He did that abduction movie that had no personality. It was like an action movie, but he's a young, good-looking guy. Efron could have made a career out of that, but he didn't.
Well, see, I thought he was really good in Parkland, which maybe I have a weird JFK thing.
He's really good in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but give me some, like, I'm sick of this, like, playing off Zac Efron as this raunchy college kid or like, raunchy beach dude and everything. Like, give me something, like, I want action, like, Zac Efron.
What was
I want,
that? Like, oh, yeah. I mean, serious. We haven't seen, like, action. We've seen serious.
I want more of it.
Parkland,
I want
more of it. What, Paperboy?
Yeah, Paperboy.
1 Week with Maryland or whatever it was called. The dude's done some really cool stuff. Like, he's not just... I do like him. Same with Robert Pattinson. Like, they're not just relying on being a pretty face. Like, they're doing cool movies.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind seeing Efron in even, like, a role like the action movie Sean William Scott did. Like, Bulletproof Monk and The Rundown, where he's just this fish out of water that gets caught up in the wrong thing. I could see him in those kind of roles. And I wouldn't mind it. A 21 Jump Street style remake of Baywatch. I like these two enough that I'll check it out.
So do you think we're just gonna keep seeing like 70s and 80s shows become these crappy comedy remake spinoff movies?
Yeah, because 21 Jump Street was very successful.
Ugh, makes me want to throw up.
So The Rock, you know, Baywatch will be somewhat successful. So, you know, we'll get a Knight Rider comedy eventually, which I'm not.
Can I get like a Magnum PI or something?
It'll come. It'll come. Simon and Simon hitting the big screen 2019.
And
Remington Steele.
Miami Vice.
We already got a Miami Vice.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
But we'll get a comedic Miami Vice.
Yeah, give me like a comedic, like Channing Tatum Miami Vice.
Give me
a
comedic Miami Vice starring
Zac Efron
and. Michael B. Jordan. Another Bad Dream. Nightmare on Elm Street getting another reboot that will completely ignore the 2010 attempt. David Leslie Johnson, writer of Orphan, will be writing. No star or director yet.
Anytime you have to ignore a movie that existed
5 years ago,
you're already off on the wrong foot.
A movie that was 5 years ago. Friday the 13th is doing the same thing. The new Friday the 13th is ignoring the remake.
That'd be like, let me ignore my first marriage and three kids.
Well, and here's the thing is...
Does anybody want these? Is anybody like, oh yeah, bring them back?
Here's the thing. I love the Nightmare on Elm Street series. I adore them. I didn't watch the remake. I have no interest in a stylized, updated version of it. If you want to make a gritty, violent, gory horror movie like the original one, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I didn't hate the Jackie Earle Haley casting. I thought he... This is going to be sound like the weirdest compliment ever. I thought he was too good of an actor for Freddy.
Yeah.
Because like Robert Englund threw himself completely into the role. Not the greatest actor, but he owned that role and he threw himself way into it. Because he was carefree. He didn't care. You know, so he was Freddy. Jackie Earle Haley, I think, is too good of an actor to commit like that. I have no interest. I didn't have any interest in the 2015. If they want to make it feel like an 80s slasher movie, absolutely. But it's going to be mainstream. You don't see mainstream 80s slasher movies.
Yeah, like, I just don't know what kind of real demographic that you really pull in with these. Like, I guess maybe you get some sort of nostalgic people, you know.
I don't even know, because here's the thing about horror fans is most of us are kind of assholes, because I'm not just, Friday the 13th, I'm going to see every one of them, or Nightmare on Elm Street, I'm going to see every
Halloween movie.
Yeah, I don't care. I love the originals. If the new one doesn't look good to me, I'm not going to see it.
Yeah.
So I'm the built-in audience, and even I didn't care. I didn't even see the 2010 one. You're trying to update it for a younger generation, but yet you're ignoring everything that made it...
you good.
That made you make that generation fall in love with you the first time. Bad Boys, Bad Boys 3 and 4 coming in 2017 and 19. Joe Carnahan possibly stepping in to direct. This, after we recorded last week, this news like dropped right away, and I was upset, because Bad Boys 3 and 4, I'm excited enough for Bad Boys 3.
Yeah, and, let alone a fourth one.
Yeah, and if you listen to our favorite movie starring rappers, Bad Boys probably gets mentioned, and we probably both gush over it for a bit. I think that first Bad Boys was something special. Like, I really do.
Yeah.
Even
the video game was so crazy.
Didn't play the video game.
Oh, it was nuts.
Two I didn't hate, but two was a little much. Two, like, really upped the stakes.
They were trying too hard.
Two got very Michael Bay-ish. What's cool about 3 and 4 is Michael Bay doesn't seem to be directing.
Which would be great.
Joe Carnahan seems to be stepping in, which, fantastic. If you want to give me keep Martin Lawrence and Will Smith, but get a little grittier, more like the first one was, because the first one had a little grit to it.
But not over the top.
Not over the top. If you can tone down Bad Boys 2, the only thing I don't want 3 and 4... connected.
You know what I don't want? I don't want him to turn Bad Boys into the A-Team.
You know what, though? I actually really, really like the A-Team. Because with action, I don't like when they try to ground it in reality and then throw ridiculous stuff in. Carnahan just went for it. Like, you know from the beginning of that movie that, I'm not going to see any realistic action.
That's true.
And he just went for it. So, like, you set your expectations like that. Like, you go into a movie like Die Hard, it feels real. Mm-hmm. That's a different type of action movie. A-Team, sensationalism. Like, it's not Die Hard.
Meant to be crazy.
Yeah, and they embraced it. That's what, when Fast and Furious took it with, I think it was 5, that really embraced that insaneness, and that's what they've been doing so well. I'm all for Carnahan, and I wish we lived in a world where we were getting an A-Team too. I didn't think it was a bad movie.
I didn't mean to, like, bring that up.
Tom Hardy producing, possibly starring in, an adaptation of 100 Bullets, the graphic novel series. I don't know how much... You don't read much comics, do you?
I do. I dabble. I really like the Walking Dead comics and stuff like that, where I hate the show.
Oh,
Walking
show's Dead, terrible, yeah.
God-awful. But I dabble in enough to know.
100 Bullets is... Well, first off, Tom Hardy could do anything.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm 100% on board.
I agree.
He's producing and starring in a Splinter Cell movie, which I'm all for. 100 Bullets, I've wanted it for a while. Not necessarily as a movie. I always thought it would make a perfect TV show. It's an awesome concept. If you haven't read the comics, it's a really cool story about, the first couple are pretty episodic, but then it gets into this deeper story, and that's more than likely what the movie will be about. But you get a bullet with 100 bullets. You get a gun with 100 bullets, untraceable. Do whatever you want with those 100 bullets. You can get away with anything.
It's a DC comic, right?
Vertigo, I believe. But it's very, very, very cool. Tom Hardy, I like his choice of projects. So I think it's in good hands with him. Christopher Guest's Mascots going to Netflix. I love Christopher Guest. Best in Show, Waiting for Guffman, Spinal Tap, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic movies. I love that. I didn't really like For Your Consideration, but this is... a Christopher Guest movie taking place at a mascot national championship.
Which is a pretty crazy premise
for a movie. That's a perfect premise. And that's what made Best in Show. Best in Show, disregard Spinal Tap. Spinal Tap obviously is a classic. But of the recent batch of Christopher Guest movies, Best in Show, I think, stands out above them. Just because it's this ridiculous setup. It's the dog show.
It's something that you could see mascots turning into, obviously.
Exactly. And so I'm very excited. But more what I wanted to talk about this is it's going to Netflix.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a successful enough director. You could throw this in limited release, get a decent theatrical run of it. But is Netflix, like, I mean, they're getting more and more. But how serious do you take them as a movie release studio?
That's a good question, because I really have yet to think of Netflix as, like, Netflix is a place where I go to watch movies that I'm really trying to, like, kill an evening and not expecting really anything good. So if they can start churning out, like, quality stuff for me to ruin my evening with, I'm all for it.
Because, I mean, like, they have the Pee-wee movie coming out, but that's the kind of project I would expect from them.
Yeah.
This Christopher Guest one, I think, is maybe it's a bigger get than I'm making it, maybe it's not as big of a get as I'm making it seem, because I am a bigger Christopher Guest fan than a lot, I think. But I mean, they have a movie coming out starring Brad Pitt, Cary Fukunaga, who was riding very, very high off of season one of True Detective, could have taken any project he wanted.
Yeah.
He's doing a movie for Netflix. Ignore the Adam Sandler deal.
Please.
Which at the time seemed like an okay get. The Duplass brothers have signed a deal with him, and they make fantastic movies. So it's a weird thing, because I feel like movies that have taken the on-demand route, that kind of go to on-demand first or same day, I feel like they don't get the kind of respect that theatrical releases do. So I'm wondering if Netflix will have that kind of stigma. But
yeah.
I mean, I like the idea that I can watch a new Christopher Guest movie without leaving my house the day it comes out.
Yeah, and that's where I really think they need to embrace that, is that you need to market these movies to people that watch a lot of movies and people that want to be able to access things conveniently. You can't market this as like, hey, this is a big movie, you can see it on Netflix. You have to be like, listen, you can see this movie before anybody else would in a theater, without the lines, without the wait, without anything.
And without the extra charge.
Yeah.
Like, if I do a lot of video on demand movies. Those are like $6-7 a pop.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Netflix, I already pay that. I'm just really excited to see where they go, because I think their original programming, as far as shows, has gotten amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a big Sense8 fan, but the quality of stuff they're putting out is phenomenal. I'd like to see them get on that level
with movies.
And I'm excited to see what they do, because they also, they're set up very, what better research can you do? They can see what movies people are watching on there. They can see what types of movies are performing the best.
And what times people watch movies, all that stuff.
So I mean, like,
it's a lot of data to pull in.
Yeah. So I mean, if you can see this type of movie is being seen the most, make that type of movie. Get some names behind it. Something I want to talk about this week. We talked real talk last week or a week before about guns and movie theater.
It was last week.
I kind of wanted to do that again. This time a little bit. I realize, it's with a grain of salt, because this conversation is coming from two straight white dudes.
Yeah.
So what we have to say about it may not be the most, but the Stonewall trailer came out last week, the new Roland Emmerich movie, and it's fascinated me. The backlash this movie's gotten.
But I wouldn't say it's surprisingly being backlashed either.
No, it makes perfect sense. Stonewall, it's about the Stonewall riots in 1969, which was like a giant step forward in the gay civil rights movement. And it all took place at the Stonewall Inn, which was predominantly drag queens and butch lesbians, mostly people of color.
Yeah.
Roland Emmerich is an out gay man who's done a lot of stuff for gay rights and stuff. So you would think the movie's in good hands with him, but the trailer came out. Man, did people not like that Jeremy Irvine, a white dude, not dressed as a woman, a white cisgender guy,
yeah,
it appears to be the lead of the movie, and not just the lead of the movie. Like, he's the eyes you see the movie from. The trailer makes it seem like he's the first one to throw a brick instead of, you know, a drag queen. So here you have the tagline for the movie is something about
where pride began is that, the tagline.
And it's the true story of the unsung heroes or something like that.
Yeah.
But yet it stars a fictional character. Like, the guy that Jeremy Irvine's playing is not involved. What are your, I mean, it's a term called whitewashing. And
yeah,
like, here you have this movie about, you know, mostly people of color, transgenders, not quote unquote normal people. Is I say that in the loosest, like,
yeah,
not what you're used to seeing on movies. If you're trying to depict that part of history,
how are you going to throw a pretty normal dude in there?
Yeah. So, I mean, is that okay? Like, for this?
I think this is going to be one of the most. See, but I'm going to counter question you here. Do you think that maybe that's the point to make this controversial so you get some attention to it?
Yeah, I think you're going the wrong way.
I agree.
I want to compare it to, look at a movie like Selma from last year.
They did that perfect.
They did it perfect. Ava DuVernay did a fantastic job directing. You know, David, David Oyelowo, I believe is his name. It was done well. What if you change that movie and it's from the point of view of a white staffer? You know, like,
probably doesn't go over nearly as well, obviously.
Yeah, and it was ballsy. It did well. It got a lot of award nominations. I think it should have been Best Picture. Why not take that kind of risk with this movie?
You would think so, especially because Selma really came out at a time where you have, like, you know, Ferguson shootings and stuff like that. And, you know, now, you know, comparatively, you have, you know,
gay marriage.
Gay marriage is legalized and stuff like that. So why take the I feel like this is oppressing
the movement. It's a step backwards.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And that's kind of, in this situation, I feel like we're both in agreement that that's not okay.
No, not at all.
Race bending in here, and the reason I want to talk about it is not just to single out Stonewall, is there's been some other stuff this year, and it ties in with Fantastic Four. There was a lot of outrage about Michael B. Jordan being black, because him and Sue Stormer. I was 100% for that.
So was I
don't care. There are mixed families. Like, I don't.
It happens.
It should. In my head, you can tell me Michael B. Jordan and Kate Mara are sisters and brother. Like, okay.
Whatever. Yeah.
So that I was okay with. But then something else that didn't make sense was Aloha, the new Cameron Crowe movie this year. Emma Stone her character was biracial. She was half Asian. That makes no sense to me. Why write a half Asian character to cast one of the whitest women around?
Freckled up.
Yeah.
Emma Stone.
Like, so something like that, like, and I love Cameron Crowe. I adore Cameron Crowe. But something like that makes no sense. Like, if you don't want to go and cast an Asian, like, somebody that looks Asian or half Asian, why write it that way? And if you decide, oh, I want Emma Stone, she's perfect. Why keep
make a
that,
different movie?
Why keep that part of it? So I mean, is race bending? It does work, obviously.
There's times where you can do it, and there's times where I think it should be done to show that race shouldn't be that big of an issue in modern films and, you know, the modern world. But a point, they really picked the worst film to try and do this.
Yeah,
maybe of all time.
And my thing has always been, if race isn't relevant to a character, I don't care.
Yeah, it doesn't
matter. Johnny Storm, I don't think of him as a white dude.
I just think of him as a dude.
Like when the whole Donald Glover for Spider-Man thing was going on.
Mm-hmm.
For the latest Spider-Man reboot. I was for it. Peter Parker is a kid that's growing up in a bad part of Brooklyn.
Peter Parker is a name. It's not a human being. Yeah,
so I mean, you can give me a black Peter Parker. I don't care. White isn't a character trait. You take somebody like Shaft or Black Panther, where that's a large part of who they are, obviously you can't whitewash there.
Yeah.
Somebody like Falcon, doesn't matter. Like, yeah, it'd be an outrage if you took away one of the few black superheroes and made him white, but, or even Blade. Like, Blade. You could give me a white Blade if
that's fine.
Tom Hardy wants to play Blade, I'm all for it. Because color isn't a character trait in every situation. And some it obviously you're not going to cast Michael Fassbender as Martin Luther King. But and that's my other point, is history. When you're casting historical people, why would you even consider
the least historical thing, the least historical race in that historical thing?
Yeah, so I don't know. It's a weird thing, and I'm not one of those that like I don't watch Ant-Man and think, "Oh, I wish there were more black people in here." I get it. You know, like
it is what it is. It's cast how it's cast. Granted, we're not on that side of things.
And that's what I'm saying. We are two straight white guys. I don't look at it like that. Like,
but I didn't watch Selma and think, wow, I wish there were more white dudes in this.
Exactly. I don't watch I don't watch from an equal opportunity viewpoint. Like, I don't see something and think like, oh, I wish some of those people were black.
Yeah.
If there's black characters, awesome. Like, when I write, like me and my buddy Tony, we are very conscious about that. We don't want anything to just look like a pool of white people. Like, we're very conscious about that, and it's not that hard to do, to just think, oh, instead of four white guys, what about two white guys and, you know, an Asian and a black guy? Like, the characters can be the same. But then it worries me on sometimes, like, if you ever get an Akira remake or a live action Akira adaptation off the ground, I mean, the names that have been attached to that in the past, the character's name is Akira and Hiro. You know, are you going to have white dudes play those?
Yeah.
Like, The Last Airbender got a lot of crap because most of the characters were white.
Or even Annie, for instance.
I like that. I mean, I didn't like Annie, but I liked that idea.
I liked what they were trying to do with it.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of cool. Because it was a different take on it, which I like.
It's interesting in some instances.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. Like, again, two straight white guys, but I thought the Stonewall thing was really, really...
as bad as it can get, almost.
As bad as it can get, and from an unexpected source. Like, I guess I expected more from Roland Emmerich, and especially in the political climate we're in right now, and with Selma doing so well last year, like, you have your chance. And I mean, I get it. I'm expecting the guy that made The Day After Tomorrow to take a chance and to make a risky movie.
Yeah.
Which I guess I don't look at it. I mean, obviously, yes. Okay. I guess I get it from the standpoint that a white dude sells a movie easier, but I don't think I buy that. Just like the fact that women can't lead action movies. I don't buy that.
Well, here's the biggest issue. You know, you look at screenshots of this movie, or, you know, you watch the trailer. There's literally two African Americans in the trailer. It's five other white people.
Yeah.
Like, you're taking something, and it's like if I took... It's like if I ordered a pizza with tomato sauce, and you said, well, Alfredo's the same thing. Yeah. It doesn't work like that. No. I'm going to send this pizza back. And, you know, people are not going to see this movie for that reason.
Yeah. So, I mean, I like the idea, as long as it doesn't come off like stunt casting. I didn't think Johnny Storm was stunt casting.
Yeah.
I thought Michael B. Jordan was a great choice. Something like Ruth Negga playing Tulip in the Preacher TV series.
Mm-hmm.
I think Ruth Negga's an awesome actress. I think she's fantastic. I think she's going to do awesome as Tulip. So, I mean, I don't see either of those as stunt casting. And I guess I'm all for colorblind casting in most cases.
Except for the color is the most important aspect of the
film. Exactly. But we weren't going to do a trailer today until like right before we were about to record. The trailer for The Hateful Eight, the new Quentin Tarantino, came out. It looks like a Quentin Tarantino movie.
In the best way.
Yeah, and the cast looks great. Sammy Jackson, Kurt Russell, Tim Roth is in there. Like,
thank God Kurt Russell's getting some cool stuff.
It looks like a cool Quentin Tarantino movie.
Once again, in the best way. It has all the things. Like I said when I was watching the trailer, I wish I could watch this and The Revenant back to back at some point, because just they're completely unrelated, but they look like movies that would be so perfectly paired for an entire day like
that. It'd be a nice little drive-in double feature.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but I think it looks cool. And it's not a bigger... Like, it's I like Tarantino, because Tarantino just makes what he wants to make.
And about what issues and topics he wants to make it on.
Yeah, and I mean, to be 8 films deep, and to be as big of a name as Quentin Tarantino is, and he's really never fallen into the studio trap. He's never really...
Really never, no.
He just makes what he wants to make. You know, him and Kevin Smith... Kevin Smith did have his foray with the major studio with Cop Out, but... At this point in his career, he's just making what he wants to make. Like, he can find money. They can both find money to make whatever they want to make. And I think it's cool because Tarantino's a unique...
One of the most unique,
I'd he's say. Unique. It's a weird term to say because he is very... He's the most unique ripoff artist of all time, I think. And I mean that in not a dig at all. Everything he does is paying homage to things that he grew up loving.
Yeah.
So everything his influences show very, very strongly.
It's like all his movies are very great tributes.
But it still feels like Quentin Tarantino. So it's not just, oh, I'm going to go out there and make this movie that looks like, you know, anything. You know, he's paying tribute. You see those influences, but he's still Tarantino. And he's got a style that you can't duplicate. So, I think 50 years from now, people are going to be studying Tarantino movies.
I would agree, because you look at anything he's done or had his, you know, fingerprints on, and it's near impeccable.
Yeah, but that's it for this week. We covered a lot. Kind of flew through it because I didn't want to go too long. if you like these news episodes, let us know. moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, twitter@moviesonup. I'm not the best on doing the Twitter and the Facebook, but let us know, especially at the Gmail. I check the Gmail all the time. If you have suggestions on... I'm all for mixing up the format of the news episodes or anything you want to hear, let us know, and we'll keep spitting them out. This week, it was the other episode was favorite movie starring rappers. Next week, we might flip-flop. It might be news first, and then... next week is our big spring preview, so...
Big.
Yeah, it's as big Real as... Real big. As big as it gets. By big, I mean...
The biggest.
It's probably an hour instead of 40 minutes. But, so that'll be next week. It might be later in the week due to some scheduling stuff, but we'll be back. We'll do another news episode next week, and we'll be back with our fall preview.
Spring preview.
Whatever.
You said spring before.
It's fall now.
It's a preview of something.
It's a fall preview. It's
big. It's so big he doesn't even know what
season. I don't know my seasons. I assume it's fall. Find more of me at Dave Bacella on Twitter, DaveBacella.com, podcast.com for all other shows. But until then, find Mike on Twitter, your man Mike, on the Twitter box. And until next week,
keep it up.